Okay, so this is the Anumana Sutta, Sutta on inference, and a bit of a boring old sutta. How many years in hell do I get for that? Enlivened, however, by the possible existence of a conspiracy theory, which I'll reveal to you at the end. Okay? It starts out. That's what I heard. Then on one occasion, Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Mahamoggallana, now I'm just going to translate this very literally, okay? And it says, Venerable Sariputta was dwelling among the buggers. Mahamoggallana was dwelling among the buggers. Okay, so this, I don't blame me. It's just what it says. Bhagesu viharati. Sungsumara giri on the Crocodile Mountain. So, slightly unusual setting. Now, according to Venerable Analio, there are two parallels to this sutta. One of them in the Madhyama Agama. So this is a Sarvasivadin version. And the other one is a individual sutta, T50, Taisho 50. According to the information given in the Taisho edition, T50 was translated by Dhamma Raksha during the period 265 to 316 AD. So that means translated during the earlier period of translations into Chinese. The period of translations into Chinese started about 100 AD or a bit after, somewhere around there. I'm not sure on the exact one, but somewhere around the 2nd century. And so that's fairly early. Most of the major Agamas and Vinayas were translated in about 400 AD. So Majjhima MA, the Majjhima Agama version, has the title A Monk Invites. Okay, this is the title. Bhikkhu Invites. While the title of T50 is, which literally, if literally translated, would translate be to undergo the year. Judging from the context, this expression appears to mean completion of the rains retreat, where the word for Chinese word for year is rendering the Pali word vasa, which also means year, as well as the rain or rains retreat. So one of the things with their Chinese versions is they give a little bit more context than the Pali version does. The Pali version, of course, Venerable Mahamoggallana just addresses the bhikkhus and gives a Dhamma discourse. Now, this being slightly unusual, so here, of course, Venerable Moggallana just sits down and then addresses the monks and then gives them a talk. Now, notice that this way of giving a discourse is, in fact, the way that the Buddha usually gives a discourse, or very often gives a discourse. He sits down and then just sort of starts out by just addressing the bhikkhus. But it's very unusual to find a disciple who does this, okay? And this is one of the distinctions which I believe we can draw in the suttas between what we call a sutta and what we call a vyakarana. A sutta is this kind of form where usually the Buddha sits down and addresses straight out. Vyakarana is given in terms of a question and answer kind of format, and almost invariably the disciples give their discourses in the form of a vyakarana. So we very rarely find a disciple giving a discourse in this kind of format. And perhaps the reason why this is so is because why this sutra is presented in an unusual form is because it's lacking the background which we find in the Chinese versions. So while the Anumana Sutta begins directly with Mahamoggallana addressing the monks, its two Chinese parallels provide some additional background to Mahamoggallana's exposition, as they indicate that the present discourse took place at the end of the annual retreat period, at the end of the Vasa. According to monastic observances, at the conclusion of this 3 months period, the monks will invite each other to point out possible shortcomings at the so-called Pawarana ceremony. Although the Anumana Sutta does not provide an explicit relation to the annual retreat or the Pavarana ceremony. Mahamoggallana's exposition begins by describing how a monk invites Pavareti, other monks, to admonish him. So you can see the use of the verb down here, Pavareti. Okay, this being the verb form of the word that's more familiar to us as Pavarana, or invitation. And so this is, of course, one of the great reasons why it's good to always go to the Pali and to read the Pali of the discourses, because the language usage is much more precise, and we can notice these kinds of connections very quickly and very easily. So maybe just given that it seems that likely that this sutta was given at the Pavarana ceremony or about the Pavarana ceremony, so maybe just give a little bit of background to that particular ceremony. Maybe Venerable Tapasi, do we have the... is it the Mahavagga or Chulavagga? I kind of go with the Pavarana, yeah, in English.
Do you want that?
Yeah, with the Pavarana Kandaka. The other one or two of them. I can get the Pavarana Kandaka, the collected group of teachings on the Pavarana. And we can have a bit of a look at that and see what the Pavarana is all about.
Answer.
Eva.
There seem to be an awful lot of words that we've seen before.
Okay.
Ayasma.
Okay, that's good.
Amantesi.
Yep. Okay. Ayasma is venerable. Okay.
Right.
So the word is ayu. The root of the word is ayu, which you know from the Indian, you have Ayurveda, is the Indian medicinal system. Ayu, literally meaning life science, Ayurveda. So the Indian word for life is ayu. And here we have ayasma is just a masculine noun formed from that, meaning one who has long life, i.e. someone who's venerable. So there's ayasma, and that's the masculine form of the word. We use aya is the feminine form. Well, and avuso is also, this word here is friend, is also from the same root. It's formed differently, but basically from the same root.
Amantesi
is to address. And this is from the root. The root here is mant, which of course we know as mantra. Okay, so meditation mantra is like a word that you repeat over and over in meditation. But originally the mantra was actually referred to the Vedic scriptures, and the not so much to a meditation word, but to the actual Vedic scriptures were called the mantra. And so amantesi is just, again, it's just a verb which is formed from that word mantra.
And
it's incidentally, it's the same word as you have in Chinese, the Mandarins in Chinese, or the Mandarin language is the court language, and is ultimately derived from, that word is derived from this as well. So, sorry?
Ayasmato.
Ayasmato is the same word as ayasma, okay? But with a different case ending, that's all. So here, ayasma mahamoggallano. The ayasma agrees with Mahamoggallana, and these are both nominative singular endings. So this is the subject of the sentence. So Venerable Mahamoggallana addressed the bhikkhus. Okay, so this is the taking the subject. And here, ayasmato agrees with Mahamoggallanasa. So this is a either dative or genitive ending, and ayasmato agrees with that. So as you can see from that even though these are the same cases, they're of course completely different forms. They look completely different. So we have to learn these things. In some cases, sometimes the different cases in Pali look similar, and so you can recognize them. In other situations, they look completely different, and you just have to learn them one by one.
Pachasosam, have we had that?
Pachasosam. Yeah, we've had that again. That's another one we've had before. This time the root here is fairly well disguised, but the actual root is lurking somewhere around here, and the actual root is the same root as sota, to the ear, and sunati, to hear. So really, probably that S and a bit of the O is really just the root. I'm not being particularly precise here, but pacha sosung is to assent to, or to agree to. It kind of means to hear, but it has more of a kind of a pregnant sense of, because pacha is actually an abbreviation of pati, or a not an abbreviation, a a compound form of pati, which is the same as in English re, as in reflect or redo or something like that. So it has that kind of reflective connotation to it. So pacha sosung is usually translated as assent or something like that. Replied or assented to, something like that.
And
etadavocha.
They look familiar.
They are. Oh, yeah, they are. These are all standard passages. Etadavocha is a compound of two words. Etad is one, meaning this or that. Okay? So this. Avocha is said. And here we can see the root VOC, the same as the English root vocal or voice. Yeah? Etadavocha. And so this is a aorist form. So notice you have two different forms here, avocha and amantesi, both being basically meaning to say, but of course just being different verbs meaning having a similar meaning. So
it all looks familiar.
Yeah. Well, it should be. That's why we're doing the chanting. We're trying to indoctrinate you little bit by little bit. So
anusasanim.
Third line up. Anusasaning. Anusasaning. Here, anusasaning means the teaching or the dispensation. It's the same root as sasana, meaning the instruction. Here it probably meant translated as instruction. Other words that you'd be familiar with is cha, meaning and. Cha, hoti, meaning is. So sometimes means he, and sometimes is used more just like a particle.
Manyanti.
Manyanti means...
Oh, yeah, last one.
Yeah, manyanti means to think, and often has the connotation of like conceiving or conceited kind of thinking or like sort of false thinking that's deluded through one's own concepts or ideas. Tasming, where are we now?
Last line, first word.
Tasming. Tasming is there, literally is there, as in that place. So this is again, this is a locative form, tasming, locative meaning relating to place. And it's a locative form of the demonstrative pronoun. So it's similar to the English, you have there, that, they, then, and so on. And so all of those kinds of words in Pali start with a T. And they're actually cognates from the English, the set of words you have like that, this, there, they, and all of those things. They have similar ones in Pali where you all start out with a T or a tad and then add a different ending in. So tasming puggale here. Tasming agrees with pugala, both being locative cases. So, literally, in that person, okay, pugala being a person, okay, nacha tasming pugale visasang apadita bang manyanti, can be either understood in a literal sense as being in that person, or could be like regarding that person, or having reference to that person. It has both a concrete meaning of being located inside something, and also a more kind of abstract meaning of being in reference to or about that person. Okay? Enough Pali class for today? That's good. Have a few more probably while we're going.
That was really good to recognize all that.
You're doing well. So I'll point out a few as we're going, because this one's quite good for that, because it is very repetitious, so you learn quite a few different words. But for now, the story. At one time, the enlightened one, the Lord was staying at Savatthi in the Jetas Grove at Anathapindika's monastery. And now at that time, several monks, friends and associates entered upon the Vasa in a certain residence in the Kosala country. One day, Bobcat, could you hit the lights for me? No, I'm reading a background story. Reading about the Povarana. That's good, thank you. Reading about the Vasa, the Povarana ceremony. Then it occurred to these monks, now, by what means can we all together on friendly terms and harmonious spend a comfortable rainy season and not go short of alms food? Very practical monks. And then it occurred to these monks, if we should neither address one another nor converse, but whoever should return first from the village for alms food should make ready a seat, should put out water for washing the feet, a footstool, a footstand having washed a refuse bowl should set out drinking water and water for washing. Whoever should return last from the village for alms food, if there's any remains from a meal, if he should so desire, he can eat them. If he does not desire, he can throw them away where there's not much grass, or he can put them into water where there's no living creatures. He should put up the seat, he should put away the water for washing the feet, the footstool, the footstand, he should put away the refuse bowl having washed it, he should put away the drinking water and the water for washing, and he should sweep the refectory. So this is a description for the basic duties around alms food, and so they're kind of making this agreement that this is how they will practice as far as their korwat goes. So whoever comes back first does all the duties, whoever finishes their meal last cleans everything up. Whoever should see a vessel for drinking water or for washing water or for rinsing toilet water void and empty should set out water. If it's impossible for him to do this by himself, he should do it by signaling with his hand, having invited a companion to help him by a movement of his hand. But he should not for such a reason break into speech. Thus may we all together on friendly terms and harmonious spend a comfortable rainy season and not go short of alms food. And then these monks lived in just that way. Now, it was the custom for monks who have kept the rains to go and see the Lord. Have you seen the Lord? Then these monks, having kept the rains at the end of the 3 days, 3 months, packed away their lodgings and taking their bowls and robes set out for Savatthi. In due course they approached Savatthi, the Jetta's grove and Atapindika's monastery, and the Lord. Sorry, I find it difficult to say that word seriously. Having greeted the Blessed One, they sat down at a respectful distance. And now, it is a custom for awakened ones, for Blessed Ones, to exchange friendly greetings with incoming monks. Then the Blessed One spoke thus to those monks. I hope that you were well, monks. I hope that you kept going. I hope that all together, on friendly terms and harmonious, you passed a comfortable rainy season and did not go short of alms food. We were well, Blessed One. We were comfortable, and we all together on friendly terms and harmonious passed a comfortable rainy season and did not go short of alms food. Now, Tathagatas sometimes ask knowing, and knowing sometimes they do not ask. They ask knowing the right time, and they do not ask knowing the right time. The Tathagatas ask about what belongs to the goal, not about what does not belong to the goal. There is bridge-breaking for Tathagatas regarding whatever does not belong to the goal. In other words, they've cut off any connection with anything which is useless. In two ways do Tathagatas question monks. Either shall we teach the Dhamma, or shall we lay down a rule of training for disciples? Okay, so this is a stock passage, which is explaining why sometimes it seems that the Buddha is asking questions, and why does he have to ask the questions if he knows the answer already, since perhaps we assume that he knows the answer, perhaps, on the other hand, he didn't know the answer. Then the Buddha spoke thus to those monks, but in what way did you monks all together on friendly terms and harmonious spend a comfortable rainy season and not go short of alms food? Now then, they explained all to the Buddha as they had lived. So the Buddha addressed the monks, saying, indeed, monks, these foolish men, having spent an uncomfortable time, pretend to have spent an equally comfortable time. Indeed, monks, these foolish men, having spent communion like beasts, pretend to have spent a comfortable time. Indeed, these foolish men, having living together like sheep, pretend to be living comfortably. Indeed, having living together in indolence, pretend to be living together comfortably. How, monks, can these foolish men observe a practice of members of other sects, the practice of silence? It is not, monks, for pleasing those who are not yet pleased, for so on and so forth, having rebuked them, having given reason talk, he addressed the monks thus. Monks, an observance of members of other sects, the practice of silence should not be observed. Whoever should observe it, there is an offence of wrongdoing. I allow monks who have kept the reins, the vasa, to invite pavarana in regard to three matters, what has been seen or heard or suspected. That will be what is suitable for you in regard to one another, a removal of offences and aiming at grasping the discipline. So this is a very interesting kind of story, and most interesting, I think, because of the Buddha's given quite a heavy rebuke to these monks who, after all, were just trying to do the right thing. I'd feel pretty shattered if I was one of those monks and I'd try to live together and really practicing hard the whole rains retreat, and then the Buddha comes and says, you've been living together like sheep and cows. I thought, oh my God, what's going on? And the Buddha does occasionally rebuke people in this kind of stern way, but usually they've done something which fairly obviously deserves it, like try to murder him or something like that. And so obviously it's an expression of some fairly strong feelings about the matter. So the idea obviously is that we should be able to talk to each other about things that are going wrong if we need to. And obviously what's, you know, not being praised here is just chit-chatting about anything and everything, but being able to speak with each other when necessary. It's interesting to notice that the description of the way that they live together in harmony is very similar to the description found elsewhere in the suttas, in the Chulabhosinga Sutta and the Upakilesa Sutta, where it's praised for the monks to be living together in that way, but also every 5 days they would sit together and discuss Dhamma all night. And so they weren't living together in total silence, but they were still keeping quiet as they were going around doing their duties and so on. So this is the origin story for the pavarana. And then it goes on to describe the actual ceremony. Thus, monks should one invite. So this is a description of a what they call a sangha kamma, and a formal act of the sangha. And these are the, if you like, legal proceedings by which the sangha operates. And so here it says, the sangha should be informed by an experienced, competent bhikkhu saying, honored sirs, let the sangha listen to me. Today is an invitation day, pavarana day. If it seems right to the sangha may invite. A monk who is an elder, having arranged his upper robe over one shoulder, having sat down on his haunches, having saluted with joined palms, should speak to the sangha thus. Your venerables, I invite the sangha in respect of what has been seen or heard or suspected. Let the venerable one speak to me out of compassion, and seeing I will make amends. And a second time and a third time he should speak thus. And so this is the pavarana ceremony. It's a very simple practice which we still do at the end of the rains. And goes through a whole sequence of events where you're supposed to do this one by one, and then all the problems, of course, happen because you have like a, you know, like a very old monk who's waiting for the other monks to invite first, and he collapses in a faint while he's waiting for the others, and so the Buddha makes a special allowance and so on and so forth. So these are going through all the details about these things. And but that's the essence of the thing. So it seems that this talk is a talk given on pavarana day. So any questions about the pavarana? Vadantumang ayasmanto. Ayasmanto pavaremi. Vadantumang ayasmanto. So this is the same kinds of words that we find in the pavarana ceremony, and so the monks will recognize these kinds of phrases. Vadantumang ayasmanto anukampang upadaya. Okay. So, to the sutta. Friend, though a bhikkhu asks thus, let the venerable ones admonish me, I need to be admonished by the venerable ones. Yet, if he is difficult to admonish, dubacho, if he possesses qualities that make him difficult to admonish, dovachasat karanehi, damehi, endowed, if he is impatient, akkamo, This is the same as the word kanti, as patient endurance, the same root. As he is impatient and does not take instruction rightly. This is where we discussed before, anusasaning, instruction. Then his companions in the holy life will think that he should not be admonished or instructed. They would think of him as a person not to be trusted. Okay. So, natcha visasang is the trust here. So then he's sabrahamachari, the companions in the holy life, sabrahamachari, natcheva, not, and indeed, watabang, to be spoken, they think. So they do not think that he should be spoken to, should be admonished. Not cha, not and anusasitabang, instructed manyati. They do not think that he should be instructed. just notice a point of Pali grammar here in this sentence. You find this is a very common kind of construction in Pali, that particles like cha, meaning and, or va, meaning or bi, meaning also, are found in each phrase of a sentence. So you say, his companions in the holy life, and do not think should be spoken to, and do not think should be instructed, and do not think that they should give trust to that person. So whereas we would put just one and at the end of a sentence, or one or at the end of a sentence with a list of things, in Pali they'll list a and or an or with each member of the list as a rule. It's not universally kept, but that's the general idea. So here's the idea. The basic idea of the sutta is that if one is possessed of qualities making it difficult to be admonished, then no one's going to admonish you, no one's going to teach you, and then where are you going to be? You're going to be lost. And we all know what that's like. If somebody's difficult to speak to and makes it hard to speak to them, then you'd rather just leave them alone. And just as a point of interest, there's the word dubbaccho. We'll meet the opposite of this later on, is suvaccho. And this is one of the words that's in the Metta Sutta and is mistranslated in the Metta Sutta. In the Metta Sutta it says something like, I've got through a whole Metta Sutta in my head to get right in the translation, gentle in speech or something?
Easy to speak to?
No, not easy to speak to. Gentle in speech, isn't it? Straightforward and gentle in speech. There you go. Straightforward and gentle in speech. Suvacho chasam vadua natimani. So it doesn't actually mean gentle in speech. It means easy to speak to or easy to admonish. Okay.
And did you get that from the medicine?
Gentle in speech. Suvacho is the opposite of it. The opposite. We'll make the opposite later. Easy to speak to, yeah. All right. So, what, friends, are the dhammas that makes one hard to speak to, hard to admonish? Here, idha, friend, a bhikkhu, is of evil wishes. Okay, papicho hoti. He is of evil papa, icha. Papikanang ichhanang. So notice here you have papicha is a compound. Papa, icha, evil wishes. And here the two words are separated out. Papikanang ichhanang. So papicho hoti, papikanang ichhanang, vasangato, he has gone under the sway, the vasa, the power. He's gone under the influence of evil wishes. Insofar as, friends, a bhikkhu is of evil wishes and has gone under the sway of evil wishes, then this too is a dhamma that makes him hard to admonish. Okay? So the root here, karana, the word karana is from the root karoti, to do. So this is making. Dova chasata is making hard to admonish. Puna cha parang, we've met before again. Puna meaning again, further. Cha meaning cha. And parang meaning beyond. So further and beyond. Again and again, or something like that. So it's just an idiom meaning and again. Friends. So this is the vocative. You notice in Pali, you always kind of address people with a certain term. So you say, you know, the Buddha says bhikkhus. And this is called a vocative case. And here the vocative avuso. A monk is aptu kangsako hoti, is paravambhi. Oh dear. He exalts himself, lifts himself up. So his apta, ukka has this idea of upness. He raises himself up and paravambhi, putting everybody else down, okay? So para, down. So notice here, para, others. Here it means others as in other people. And here the similar word, parang, meaning like beyond, okay? Or beyond the shore. It's the same word as in paramita, okay? So having two, the same, similar kind of word, but with slightly different meanings here. Paravambhi is admonishing others. Insofar, friends, as a bhikkhu exalts himself and disparages others, then this is something that makes him hard to admonish. Then a bhikkhu is angry. Punacha parang. Again, a bhikkhu is angry. Kodhano hoti. And is abhibhuto, is like overwhelmed or beaten, defeated, overcome by anger. So this is another one. And here kodhano and kore hetu upanahi, he's resentful because of the anger. Okay? And so at the end of each one it says, ayampi dhammo, this too, pi meaning also, ayam, this, also dhamma, makes him hard to admonish. Ponecha parangavaso bhikkhu, kodhano hoti kodha hetu abhi sangi. Okay, so is because of that is resentful. So kodha hetu, the word hetu here meaning cause, caused by the anger, is resentful. Ayampi dhammo dova jasat karano. Ponecha parangavaso. And again, friend, bhikkhu is angry. And he utters words bordering upon anger. So here, kodha samanta. Okay, Bhikkhu Bodhi is translated as bordering on anger. Vacha is speech, again related to voice or vocal in English. Vacha nichareta, he utters those words, lets them out. And here again, this is another Dhamma. Oops, let's go back. Previous. Here, Bhikkhu is frustrated by his inability to control the software, and as a result of that, he experiences anger and frustration. And this is the word, Pali word for recalcitrant software. Patiparati, not really. Anyway, sorry everybody. Okay, here Bhikkhu is reproved. Chodito. And when he's reproved, he resists. Patiparati, the reprover, okay? So, here's another one. He's reproved and he denigrates the reprover. So here's the reproval, chodakang. So notice this, we have the reproved, okay, chodito, right? And the reprover. Now this ending, aka, often is used in this kind of personal sense to mean the one who, okay? And you often find it, for example, in various names, like, for example, Chandako. Chanda meaning enthusiasm or zeal or zest, and Chandako meaning the one who has the enthusiasm, the zeal or the zest. So this is the aka ending. The process is called secondary derivation. Right. And another one, Chodakasa. And he, here, one who's reproved, and he counter-reproves the reprover. Okay? So you get reproved, and then you say, well, look who's talking, mate. The pot's calling the kettle black. And remember, Eva, you asked about the pacha sosung word earlier, and here we have pacha ro beti. Again, the pacha having the idea of back or reflecting it back. So you reflect the reproval back on the reprover. So pacha or papi. Often having this is cognate with the English prefix re, sometimes anti. Counter reproves the reprover. So I think most of these are things that we probably recognize in our own conduct and probably get a bit embarrassed as we're reading through this and we say, oh my goodness, really, I've done that one as well. Here, Bhikkhu is reproved. And he prevaricates anye nanyang paticharati. So this is like anya nanyang is like from one to the other, paticharati, wanders about from one to the other. It's quite a descriptive, quite a vivid phrase in Pali, paticharati. Again, pati as in re, charity to wander. The same root as the brahmacharya, the holy life. Bahidha gatang apanameti. The apanama here, okay? So nama is the same word as in nama rupa, okay? But also having the meaning here of to bend, okay? So it's also the same root as namo, as in when we go namo tassa bhagavato. So namo literally having the meaning of to bend, as in to bow down in worship, okay? So to bend here, apa meaning, or having the meaning of away or from, okay? So you're bending it from the talk. The talk is bent away outside, bahidha, okay? So when you're reproved, you start talking about something else and you leave the talk away from what you're being talked of, yeah? So this is quite nice. Prevaricates leaves the talk aside and shows anger, hate, and bitterness. It shows anger, kopa, dosa, and apachayancha. Patukaroti shows all of these things. Patukaroti is to manifest or display. Right, next one. A bhikkhu is reproved and he fails to account for his behavior. Okay? So he can't explain it, what he's done. He's contemptuous and insolent.
Contemptuous and insolent here. Contemptuous? Oh yeah, yeah.
Makhi and palasi. Contemptuous and insolent. And here he is envious and avarice and avaricious. Envious and avaricious. Isuki hoti matari. Bhikkhu is fraudulent, sato, and deceitful, mayavi. So these are kind of more or less synonyms, all these words. He's obstinate, tadho, literally like kind of stiff or rigid. Hoti ati mani. Mani is, mana is conceit. Okay? And ati means excessive, over the top. Ati means over the top, excessive conceit. So he thinks of himself excessive amount. So notice that these kind of lists of unwholesome dhammas is quite similar to other lists of unwholesome dhammas that we've met before, especially in the first chapter of the Majjhima. And several of the suttas dealt with similar kinds of themes there, like the Saleka Sutta and Anangana Sutta and so on. And the last one, of course, this wouldn't apply to any one of us. Sandhi paramasi hoti. Sun, here meaning own, okay, one's own. Dhiti, view. One's own opinion. Paramasi, grabs hold of his own opinion. Okay. Adhanagahi, grabs hold of his own opinion, holds on to them tenaciously. Agahi, adhanagahi, here the word gaha, paramasa, meaning to grab hold of, and often having the idea of to misapprehend, to wrongly grab. Here the word, notice also the word gahi, also to hold. Dupati nisagi, relinquishes them with difficulty. Pati nisaga, to relinquish. Dupati nisaga means it's hard to relinquish it. Okay? So, of course, it's not something that any of us would ever be guilty of. Interestingly enough, the Chinese version don't have this particular paragraph here, so we can immediately conclude that this is not meant to be there, so it's all right to hold on to your own views. And it's obviously a later interpolation, and that's fine.
Maybe the Mahaviharans were having some trouble.
I suspect there may be something to that, yeah. The two Chinese parallels do, however, and this is bad news, there's several other qualities that are absent from the Anumana Sutta, such as being without a sense of shame and associating with evil friends. Okay. So slight differences. We also notice this in the early ones, that these lists are obviously talking about similar kinds of things, but some slight differences, variations in the details. It's, of course, quite understandable. Now we come to a more interesting little variation. Not necessarily all that interesting, but a little bit more interesting. The two Chinese versions continue at this point, according to Venerable Anario, by recommending the following reflection. As I do not like it when somebody else displays irritation, for example, if I were to show irritation, others will not like me. Reflecting in this way, one will train to overcome these detrimental qualities. So both the Chinese version has this kind of reflection at this point in the sutta. The Pali version, however, only has such a reflection only when describing the case of a monk who is free from such unwholesome qualities, a freedom that will earn him the chance of receiving advice from other monks, even if he has not asked for it. So this is found in the translation we have on page 192, and it says number 6 here, paragraph number 6. The person with evil wishes and a bhikkhu ought to infer about himself in the following way. So here we have the word the infer, which is of course where the inference of the title comes in. A person with evil wishes and dominated by evil wishes is displeasing and disagreeable to me. If I were to have evil wishes and be dominated by evil wishes, I would be displeasing and disagreeable to others. A bhikkhu who knows this should arouse his mind thus: I will not have evil wishes and be dominated by evil wishes. So both the Pali and the Chinese have this kind of reflection, but the Chinese has it earlier on. at the beginning of what would be paragraph 4 in the sutta, whereas the Pali only has it in paragraph 6. Now, according to Venerable Anario again, the two Chinese discourses conclude their exposition of this positive case, that is to say the next section we're about to read, with a correspondingly positive reflection. Just as I like someone who does not display irritation, for example, so others will like me if I do not show irritation. This second positive reflection does not occur in the Pali discourse. Thus, while the Chinese versions have two reflections, a reflection on negative qualities at the end of their exposition of negative qualities, and a reflection on positive qualities at the end of their exposition of positive qualities, the Pali version has only one reflection, namely a reflection on negative qualities at the end of its examination of positive qualities. Right? Got that? Since the three versions continue by treating first the negative and then the positive results of self-examination, the presentation in the Chinese versions seems to fit better with the pattern of this exposition. You got that? No?
Good qualities are to be praised by...
Okay, so the point here is now that at this point that we've reached so far in the sutta, the bhikkhu in the sutta has reflected that I've got all these bad things in me, right? Okay? And then, according to the Chinese versions, at that point, he then reflects, oh, if I have these bad things in me, then no one's going to like me, so I'd better get rid of them. So that's what the Chinese versions have. The Pali doesn't have anything. Then, all of the suttas then go on to talk about, if I have these good qualities, then everyone's going to like me, okay? Right? So they have having these good qualities, and then the Chinese says, if I have these good qualities, people are going to like me. Whereas the Pali, if you have a look at this paragraph, is actually quite anomalous, because it's just gone to talk about the qualities that make somebody easy to admonish, and then says a bhikkhu should infer in this way, well, a person with evil qualities, and so on, evil wishes. So it's then inferring about evil qualities, okay? So the balance of the sutta is kind of destroyed, so Venerable Analia thinks, and I think quite rightly, that this may be a bit of a textual flibble flobble going on. That's a technical term there. And I'll explain that one day. And right. Anyway, as I said.
Hearing.
It's not all that important, okay?
Yeah, but is that Ante? Is that only the flibble flobble is in the Pali?
The flibble flobble is in the Pali, yeah.
But then the Chinese is, it's got, well, people will like me if I have these good qualities.
Yeah.
Then the intention is not really pure, is it?
Oh, it's not too bad. Could be worse.
Yeah.
It's better than saying people like me if I give them lots of money.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, this is, I mean, it's a, the whole sutta is sort of pitched at a fairly, you know, fairly preliminary level, pretty basic level, so I guess it's sort of appealing to sort of a basic motivation for moral conduct, yeah. But yeah, you're quite right. Okay. All right. Next. Okay, what? Although a bhikkhu does not ask me, does not ask thus, let the Venerable Ones admonish me, I need to be admonished by the Venerable Ones. Yet if he is easy to admonish and possesses qualities that make him easy to admonish, if he is patient and takes instruction rightly, then this word he translates is patient. I didn't remark on that before, but see, it doesn't really fit, does it? It's that he's patient. It's not really about being patient. It's about being accepting. Yeah? If he's accepting of what people say to him, this is really the point, isn't it? This word kamo from kanti, and I think, I mentioned this last week, I think, this word kanti is usually translated as patience, but I think in many cases, if not most cases, it's actually better translated as acceptance. Yeah? So if he's accepting of being instructed.
That makes a bit of a psychological difference, because if you're being patient with what someone is saying, you're not really acting on what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
If you accept
yeah.
the person,
very true, yeah.
You can accept, oh, well, I am at fault.
Exactly, yeah.
Say, well, whatever, I'm just...
Yeah, absolutely, it's very true. You know, patience is what you do. You know, your patience is like, you know, well, I'd rather not be here, but I'm going to put up with you because I really think that, you know, I want to try and do the right thing. Whereas acceptance is to really take it on board.
Yeah, so acceptance is better rendering there.
And then maybe with understanding fit into that, because normally there has to be understanding if there's going to be acceptance.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's exactly how this word kanti or kama, kanti, this is the adjective form, but this word is used in precisely that sense of actually understanding something because you accept it. Yeah. Okay, so think of him as a person to be trusted. And what? Friends, so here we have katame, what? Cha. And what? Friends, are the sovachasa karana dhamma. Okay, are those dhammas making somebody easy to admonish? Here we had suvacho, as in the suvacho chasa mudu anatimani, as in the Metta Sutta. Sovachasa nakaranehi. Sovachasa karanehi. Sovachasa karana dhamma. Idhavuso. Here, friends. A bhikkhu is not of evil wishes and is not under the sway of evil wishes. He does not exalt himself, his atta, and does not disparage others. And he's not angry and overwhelmed with anger, and he's not angry and resentful because of anger. He's not angry and stubborn. He does not anger, does not resist the reprover or denigrate the reprover or counter reprove the reprover, and does not prevaricate, lead the talk aside, show anger, hate and bitterness. He's reproved and does not fail to account for his behavior, and is not envious or avaricious, and is not obstinate or arrogant, and does not adhere to his own views or hold on to them tenaciously. And he relinquishes them easily. Okay? These are the qualities that makes him easy to admonish. Tatra vuso. Therein, friends. And we'll pass his favorite word. Tatra. Tatra vuso. Herein. Therein. Herein. Herein, friends. Bhikkhu. Attanava. Attanang evang anuminitabhang. So, should by himself infer of himself. So this word, anumana, is actually quite interesting. I mean, it's just used in a very simple way here to infer of oneself or to draw a conclusion. And the form of the word, mana, okay, to think or to measure. Now, we've already met this word a couple of times already in this sutta. It's in the manyanti here. Manyanti, one should think he's worthy of being instructed or should be instructed. So here's the same root, manyanti. And we've also met it in being atimani, as in of great conceit. So two senses in which it's used, one just to think of something and one to have conceit. And here we're having it used to measure. Now, the literal root of the word mana is related to the English word measure, and also to English words like the moon, okay? The moon being, of course, the measure of the months, yeah? And so the moon being one of the things which you use to measure. And so this word mana, having very many words, and of course similar to the word mano, the mind, and many others. So anu mana, anu means along with or from. Okay, so anumana, to measure alongside something. In other words, to infer something. And so this is what the nature of inference is that you have something which you know, yeah, and then you draw something out for that. You infer, you move from there to something that you don't know, but something that's similar. So this is what we do when we anumana, when we infer something. And so this word, anumana, became one of the basic terms in later Buddhist philosophy. And the later period of Buddhist philosophy, so from, say, 400 or 500 AD onwards, the principal topic or the main discussion was the problem of epistemology, like how do we know something? And Buddhist schools generally, the Indian schools generally, agreed on two main forms of knowledge. One was anumana, or inference. The other one is pratyaksha, meaning direct awareness or direct perception. So they believed both in seeing something directly and also in inference about something. And the problematic category was always the testimony of a teacher, because, of course, Buddhists want to believe in what the Buddha taught.
And so where exactly does that fit in among those things has always been one of the problems of Buddhist epistemology. So this anumana became a very important term in later Buddhist history, and this is kind of one of the great contributions the great philosophers like Dignaga and others made very extremely sophisticated like maps of how we come to know things in different kind of senses.
That word anatimani, is it?
Anatimani.
That's also the nervous system.
In the meta, it is, yeah, anatimani. Atimani, excessive conceit. Anatimani is not concessive, excessive conceit, yeah. Okay, so, yo kvayang pugalo papicho. And if this person, this is ko, this word here, kwa, spelled kwa, okay? But it's actually the same word as ko. So when it's by itself, it's ko, or ko, and when it's in a compound, it's kwayang, just meaning indeed. This person is of evil wishes and has come under the sway of evil wishes. When ahancheva, when I too, panasang, if I too were to be under the sway of evil wishes, then I would be undelightful and unpleasing to others, apio. Amanapo. Okay, so thus, knowing when one knows thus, then one would not, would arouse his mind thus. Chittang upadeta bang. Again, this phrase, the arousing of mind, we met earlier in the Salika Sutta and other places as well. So this is that reflection that we were talking about before, about comparing oneself as whether one would be someone who'd be likable, who's developed these qualities. And so then, of course, it goes throughout all of the, repeating all of the categories that we've seen before. Okay? Herein, friends, a bhikkhu atanava atanang should investigate himself. Pachavekhita bang. And so this is another word which we meet quite frequently, pachavekana. Here the actual root of this word is here, and it's slightly disguised, but the actual root is ikha. Well, and it's related, and meaning to watch or to look at. And it has the prefix pacha, as in again, to reflect or review, and here another prefix ava. So should review or reflect. Okay? And should review or reflect. Do I have evil wishes and am I dominated by evil wishes? If when one reviews himself, he knows I have evil wishes, I'm dominated by evil wishes, then he should make an effort to abandon those evil wishes. Pahanaya vayamita bang. For the abandoning, for the pahana, vayama, as in Sister Vayama. Okay, vayamita bang. Okay, making an effort. Samma vayama. To abandon them, rightly abandon them. And if you decide that you don't have those things, tena vaso bhikkhuna, teneva piti mappamo jena, vihata bang. Okay. By that bhikkhu. So here we have bhikkhuna, which is of course the word bhikkhu, but here is an instrumental case, meaning by that bhikkhu. Okay, tena. Again, I mentioned that this word beginning with T can have all kinds of meanings like there and that and then and this and all of these kinds of words. So here is another meaning, tena, by that bhikkhus. Teneva piti pamojena vihata bang aho rattanusikina kusalesu dhammesu. So a very nice phrase here. By that bhikkhu, dwelling, well, he should dwell, abide with rapture and joy. All training himself all day and all night in wholesome qualities, in kusala dhammas. And so it's a very nice phrase. And we'll come back to this, mention of this again, so that the point of this is, you know, to notice there's a sort of asymmetry, if you like, in the psychology here. When you have the bad qualities, right, then you don't think, oh, I'm sad and depressed and I'm going to start beating myself up about it. You abandon those qualities, yeah? But when you have the good qualities, you feel happy and glad. So it mentions being happy and glad when you have the good qualities, but it doesn't mention being sad and depressed when you have the bad qualities, yeah? In other words, you're supposed to focus on the positive side and not focus on the the negative sign, just abandon the negative sign. So come up to here, and again going through all of these qualities, abiding day and night in good qualities, and then of course with the classic simile, just as a woman or a man, iti wa puriso va daharo yuva mandana jatiko, young, youthful, fond of adornments, daharo yuva mandana jatiko, mandana of course being in the eight precepts, adase wa parisuddhe pariyodate, on viewing the image of her own face in a clear, bright mirror or a basin of clear water, in just the same way that Paris Hilton no longer does, because she's abandoned looking in the mirror now. Of course, the official news from the Guardian today, she's given up looking in the mirror. She's a reformed woman now that she's been in jail for 5 days, okay? So just like Paris Hilton used to, but does not anymore, look at her face in the mirror. Here's a mukha nimitta, the reflection of your face, the nimitta. Notice the word we use in meditation, nimitta, here meaning reflection. Sakang mukha nimitta, one's own reflection of one's own face. One would review them, and then you would see any dirt or blemish, and then you would make an effort to get rid of that dirt or blemish. And if you did not see any dirt or blemishes, then you would think, it is a gain for me, I am purified. In the same way that the bhikkhu would review himself. And it goes straight down to here, and it ends up there saying that bhikkhu should dwell in rapture and delight, training himself day and night in wholesome dhammas. Okay? And there the Pali of the sutta ends. Now, here is the Chinese versions at that point. Then add another bit where they say that one who's dwelling in rapture, then that leads to tranquility. Tranquility leads to samadhi. Samadhi leads to seeing things as they really are, and so on and so forth. And this little passage is not found in the Pali. And I think that there's a conspiracy going on. And I've already noticed that. I hadn't noticed it with this particular sutta, but I noticed it with other suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya. Now, this particular kind of teaching is called, Bhikkhu Bodhi is given it the title Transcendental Dependent Arising, okay? And he's got this book here about it. This is an e-book. This is published originally as a real publication. And Bhikkhu Bodhi is given a very nice discussion of this particular sequence. And so it gives a sequence of dhammas. And in the Upanishad Sutta, the exact sequence, it talks about I'll just give this positive side of it. It talks about faith giving rise to joy, joy giving rise to rapture, rapture giving rise to tranquility, tranquility giving rise to happiness, happiness giving rise to concentration or samadhi, samadhi giving rise to the knowledge and vision of things as they really are. The knowledge and vision of things as they really are is a supporting condition for disenchantment or nibbida. Nibbida, turning away, is the supporting condition for dispassion, viraga. Viraga is the supporting condition for freedom. And freedom is the supporting condition for the knowledge of destruction, kaye jnana. Just as monks, when rain descends heavily upon some mountaintop, the water flows down along with the slope, and it fills the clefts, the gullies, and the creeks. These being filled up, fill the pools. These being filled up, fill the ponds. The ponds being filled up, fill the streams. And when the streams are filled up, they fill the rivers. When the rivers are filled up, they fill up the great ocean. And so this is this teaching of the Bhikkhu Bodhi calls transcendental dependent arising. There's no really handy traditional term for it. In Swift Pair of Messengers, I called it dependent liberation. It's a slightly handier phrase than transcendental dependent arising. Now, this is a teaching which you find in the Pali a few places. You find a few suttas in the Anguttara and the Upanishad Sutta in the Sangyutta and a couple of other places. And it's kind of embedded in several other teachings. It's quite similar to, for example, the seven enlightenment factors and other things like that. But you don't find a very strong emphasis on this teaching at all within the Pali tradition. And in fact, it seems to be pretty much neglected. And one thing I noticed when I was doing the research for History of Mindfulness, that there's a whole set of discourses which are found in the Chinese Madhyama Agama from the Sarvastivadin school, which dealt with this particular teaching. And all of these suttas were absent from the Pali. And I'll just give you a summary of some of these suttas which are found in the Chinese translation, but all of these suttas are absent from the Pali. I'm not going to summarize the suttas themselves, but just give you an example of the different sequences that we find in these things. So in MA 44, mindfulness and clear comprehension leads to protection of the sense faculties. Protection of the sense faculties leads to protection of the precepts. This leads to non-remorse. Non-remorse leads to gladness. Gladness leads to rapture. Rapture leads to bliss. Bliss leads to samadhi. That leads to knowledge and vision of things as they have become. Yatha bhut and jnana dasana leads to repulsion, to fading of lust, to liberation and nibbana. So it's another sequence, very similar to the Upanishad. In Majjhima 54, you have the honoring and attending upon a teacher, approaching a teacher, listening to the good Dhamma, listening to the Dhamma that they paying attention to it, considering of the meaning of the Dhamma, learning the Dhamma by heart, reciting the Dhamma that you've learned by heart, the reflective acceptance of the teachings that you've learned by heart. So here the word acceptance, also kanti, we discussed earlier, to accept those teachings, giving rise to faith, giving, which we found also in the Upanishad Sutta, giving rise to right consideration, probably yoniso manasikara, giving rise to mindfulness and clear comprehension, and then the same as the previous sutta, protection of the sense faculties, protection of precepts, non-remorse, gladness, rapture, bliss, samadhi, knowledge and vision of things as they have become, repulsion, fading of lust, liberation, and nibbana. And in Majjhima 55, again, a similar sequence, although here it goes through the ordinary 12 factors of dependent origination. And there's a whole series of other suttas featuring Venerable Anuruddha, and I'll just mention a few of these. And one of them is called the Katina Dhamma Sutta. So according to this sutta is not found in the Pali canon, although the background events are mentioned in the commentary to one of the Dhammapada verses, Dhammapada 93. Now, Venerable Anuruddha requested that Venerable Ananda organize a group of monks to sew replacements for Anuruddha's worn-out robes. This is for the Katina time. The Buddha noticed the monk sewing and asked Ananda why he had not informed him so that he could help in sewing the robes. So here's a very, very nice little sutta here. And this is a nice counterpart to another sutta called the Mahasunyata Sutta. In that sutta, Ananda and a group of monks are sewing the robes and the Buddha tells them off. He said, why are all these monks gathered together, wasting time, chit-chatting around and not meditating? And Ananda says, well, actually, we came here to sew some robes. And the Buddha kind of grumbles a bit and says, no, 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 and gives a discourse. He didn't quite say, no, 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 but that's just a summary. And so in that one, he was admonishing them. But here, it gives like the other side. So here he actually comes along and says, oh, why didn't you tell me? You know, I should have sewn Anuruddha's robes as well. So he sort of joins in with the monks and starts sewing Anuruddha's robes.
We should tell this to the adults.
Shh. You're just so naughty, Tomasi. When they were finished, the Buddha lay down to ease his sore back and asked Anuruddha to deliver a speech on Katina to the monks. Anuruddha spoke of how he embraced the monk's life and observed the precepts, abandoned the hindrances, developed meditation, attained the four jhanas and the six clear knowledges, culminating in arahantship. And the Buddha sat up, praised Anuruddha, and encouraged the monks to practice these katina dhammas, which is a great way of understanding the katinas, and so on and so forth. So there's a whole list of other suttas also talking about praising the practice of jhana and so on, which are all absent from the Pali but found in the Chinese Madhyama Agama. So in addition to that, there also is, I believe, although I can't actually quite find the reference right now, but I believe that there is a collection in the Chinese Samyukta Agama dealing specifically with this teaching. And those suttas are in the Pali either lost or scattered here and there, and they kind of lose their strength, by they kind of get marginalized. And so the outcome of that little discussion is this kind of notion of the way of meditation being through a conscious development of a positive psychology, and the conscious development of happiness as being the vehicle leading to liberation, And as many of you know, this has been a kind of a major theme of my own research and practice, has been to notice how this has been marginalized and in some cases actively disparaged within modern Theravada, where the development of happy states of mind has been seen as being a waste of time. And it just doesn't lead to anywhere. You just get stuck in blissful feeling and so on and so forth. And it's interesting to see how far that modern Theravada has drifted from the suttas, where we don't find those teachings at all. And we find this very strong encouragement of the positive psychology. And it seems perhaps that when we look at some of the kind of very dry and grim approaches to meditation from some of the masters in contemporary Theravada, that this tendency has deep roots and was even influenced the redaction of the canon itself.
Okay, could you say, like, all these references to doing, like, small acts of goodness or big acts of goodness which create happiness in the mind, which leads to eventually the jhana.
Mm.
Like you always say, I expect good merit to do a good deed.
Yeah.
But the merit really refers to that gladdening of the mind, which then leads to jhana. Could you use that as an interpretation?
Partly. That's not the full scope of merit, but that's certainly an important part of it, yeah. Yeah. See, sometimes you don't experience the happiness right away.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got all those references to, like,
sometimes you do good and you still
feel horrible.
Feel horrible afterwards. Yeah.
Because there's always this tendency that, you know, people think of merit as some sort of far off distant thing.
Right, right.
And they make it into some sort of esoteric thing which, you know, they don't. You know, it's all some great merit.
Yeah.
I think it's the immediate quality that it brings about.
Absolutely.
I think also, Dante, in relation to the positive psychology that, you know, maybe modern Theravada hasn't so emphasised, I think within skillful means, I mean, if you look at your own state of mind, that it's flat or it's low in energy or there's any sort of depression there, you know, well, for me, certainly skillful means is okay, that's how things are now.
Right.
So, you know, see the beauty in the sky or beauty in clouds or beauty in a gum tree or beauty in a wombat.
Yeah.
You know, get some energy.
Well, I don't know about wombats, but anyway, go on.
I think there's a little one there. But you know what I mean? To brighten up the mind. Because when we're flat,
yeah, absolutely, energy, yeah.
I mean, Samadhi, well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think much is going to happen in that department. So to lift up and re-energize isn't encouraged often in some of the modern day teachings, but isn't as it is. And from a practical level, is so important.
Very important, yeah, to recognize that. And, you know, and sometimes things just come and go also. You know, so it's one aspect of it. It's just the awareness aspect. As things come and go, it's like, you know, it's like the clouds come over some days, and some days it's sunny, and you can't get too worried about that. But certainly, especially if you notice it getting more persistent, then you need to do something about it.
Don't you just notice it?
You're going to be in big trouble one of these days when all about it. I don't know where you get this naughtiness from.
Okay, the story I read about some monk that the Venerable Sariputta took off into the forest and taught mindfulness of body parts. And then he took him to the Buddha, and the Buddha manifested a lotus for him to meditate on. Are you familiar with that story?
Yeah, except I don't remember it as being a lotus. I remember it as being a fire casino, or red casino, perhaps.
I guess a different one. He'd been a goldsmith for 500
lifetimes. Yeah, look, I think it was, anyway, the version I remember, I think it was like the colour of it that he recognised from the gold.
Yeah.
He did it on the fire casino and then used it to burn the whole universe down in his mind. Yeah. No, it's the same story. It's a distant variation on the story. I think that's from maybe from Dhammapada commentary or something. Yeah. So what was the question?
No, I'm just saying you're talking about like the modern Theravada.
Mm.
That's sort of more like a boiler, like being in a sort of a boiler factory boiling the actual defilements,
mm-hmm.
like putting up with the pain.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many references in the suttas to developing beautiful states of
pain. Yeah. Subha Vimuti. Yeah.
But Benjamin, talking about the fire casino, do you think that the fire casino is a later interpolation?
Probably not. And the casinos are mentioned, as you know, occasionally in the suttas. They're not given any particularly great prominence, but I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be, you know, just something that the Buddha taught now and then. Yeah. You know, again, probably being a pre-Buddhist meditation practice, which the Buddha adopted into his system. Yeah. And what has changed is the meaning of the word casino has changed. Casino, the literal meaning, if you look in the Pali Text Society dictionary, they're kind of quite uncertain as to what the root of it is or what the derivation of it. And that's the reason for that uncertainty is because the meaning has changed that we use it for is drastically changed from what it means in the suttas. And the actual root of the word casino is the Sanskrit word meaning totality. So the word casino actually means totality. And if you look at the way it's described in the suttas, it says, you know, he enters upon the fire casino above but below, all around, non-dual, immeasurable, non-dual, advayam. And so it's obviously this idea of this infinitude of whatever you're entering upon, the fire or the water, and you have this measureless perception of whatever the element or casino that you're using. And that's what casino meant. It meant the measurelessness of it, the infinitude of it. So it was a name for an exalted meditation attainment. And that's what casino meant. And it's only from the Visuddhimagga that we have the meaning of casino as being an object, like a clay disc. The paradigm of it is a clay disc which you sit in front of. And the word casino came to use denote the object which you use to develop it rather than the state of mind which you develop as a result of that practice. So that's something to doesn't necessarily affect the meaning of what the practice is, but it certainly affects the meaning of interpretation of some sutta passages about casino.
And how come the fire casino is giving so much importance, or fire element is giving so much importance rather than the others? So you have a foremost disciple wearing the fire element, but not a foremost disciple in the other
element? I'm not sure. It is mentioned quite a few times in the sutta, the fire element. You know, he enters upon the Tejo Dhatu and then flies in the air and explodes in a ball of flame and these kinds of things. I guess it's just much more fun than the other ones. You know, earth casino is pretty boring. What are you going to do? He creates a big pile of mud or something like that, you know. It's not particularly interesting. I'd much rather play with fire if I was going to play with anything. But in...
Is it from the fire circuits and all that stuff?
Probably, yeah.
Fire worship? Yeah.
Quite likely, yeah. Okay, let's finish by paying respects.
Buddham Bhagavantam Abhivade Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammam Namassami Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangha